Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to my new show, I Got a Vent, on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Denny Griffin. For the next half hour, we'll be discussing, or at least I'll be discussing, politics, current events, and some items that are in the news. The reason I decided to try my hand in a political talk show is primarily because of the upcoming elections. There's a certain amount of interest so far in the two presumptive candidates. There, I'm sure, will be heightening interest, increasing interest after the conventions and the vice presidential nominees are named, and I think things will, more people will become interested. And over the years, I've become very annoyed, I guess would be a right word, with politics. I'm somewhat of a political junkie. I follow it, but at times it drives me nuts. And I get very annoyed with some of the things I see and hear. And I decided that maybe it would be a good idea to vent my frustrations and get them off my chest. So I Got a Vent came to mind as possibly a method to do that. I'm a registered Republican. I consider myself conservative. So my opinions will tend to be on the conservative side. However, I try to keep an open mind, and if someone can convince me that I'm wrong, I have no problem in, when new facts come to light, to change an opinion. It's a program I'd like to be for civil discourse, intelligent conversation, so people who have opinions that they'd like to put forth, either pro or con, are welcome to do so. But any callers will have to keep it in an intelligent, civil tone. I'm not going to take any abuse from anybody. If other callers or guests I have should not be subjected to abuse, verbal abuse. So if you call up with a full head of steam because you don't like my position, and you want to light into me, you probably are going to get disconnected in fairly short order. The other thing I'd like to mention is that if you call up and we're having a discussion on a certain topic and you throw information out as fact, I will ask you the source of that information, how you arrived at that particular position or conclusion. So if you're going to throw information out as fact rather than opinion, don't be offended if I ask you just how you came to base your decision. And today's topic I put down in the show announcement is the spin game. And I'm talking, of course, about political spin. And we will talk about that, but there have been some more recent developments over the past couple of days, and I'm going to get into another area or two as well as political spin. If you'd like to contact me with a question, comment, or to voice your opinion, the number is 646-478-0982. That's 646-478-0982. And you can also text message through my chat room on my profile page on Blog Talk Radio, and I'll be happy to respond to the messages on the air. Okay, political spin. Well, I personally think that spin might be too nice a word. I consider a lot of what is called spin to be lies. I think there's a difference. For example, if you remember the Bill Clinton-Lewinsky situation, Monica Lewinsky, the investigation in which there was a denial that he had, and the finger-waving thing on camera, I've never had sex with that woman. Well, anyway, then the blue dress surfaced, and there was finally established that there had, in fact, been some relationship, a physical relationship between President Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. And after that was established as a fact, then came spin. And what I considered spin in that case was we had established facts. The pro-Clinton people then put their spin out, which was, this is a personal matter, it's a private matter, what goes on in Bill Clinton's bedroom is of no business to the public, to Ken Starr, the prosecutor, the special prosecutor who was involved, and so on and so forth. So that became, they took a fact and presented it in a light most favorable to their man, Bill Clinton. That was strictly, in fact, I recall that in some quarters, Ken Starr, the special prosecutor, was called basically a pervert of some kind who wanted to have his, who was absolutely engrossed in Bill Clinton's sex life and so on. So I considered that to be spin. There was a fact established, and then both sides interpreted it in a certain way, and they put that out there. The anti-Clinton forces were basically saying that he had proved he lacked judgment, and his indiscretions had placed him, made him vulnerable to possible blackmail and so forth, which could affect national security, and that was the spin the anti-Clinton forces put on it. Then you can get into what I consider lies, going beyond spin. That's where you don't really have facts. You're making up facts, presenting information as fact, when there's no real solid basis for that information, for those allegations or contentions. And that's being considered as spin. If you listen to any of these news channels, cable news channels, the various programs, you'll hear the information being put out by the candidates or their surrogates as spin. And I think in a lot of cases you have out and out lies, falsehood, or misstatements rather than putting out a certain interpretation of a fact. So when I'm talking about spin, that's where I'm coming from on this. And in fact, I believe it was in the 2000 presidential campaign, I became so frustrated with some of the statements that were made by candidates and surrogates that had no basis in fact. And I'm talking to you, this is not limited to one party. Both parties are capable of spin and lie, not telling. But I became so frustrated to see the host of a program, of a political program, where they're interviewing a candidate or surrogate, and just sit there as the guest makes outrageous statements. Sit there with their mouth shut, and I felt it was basically a free political ad, because the guest was allowed to say pretty much whatever he or she felt like saying, and the host just sat there on their hands and never uttered a word. They let misstatements, misinformation, and lies flow forth and never challenged the guest. So I decided in my frustration to email cable networks and express my outrage, and I suggested that it was a good idea, in my opinion, to get tougher on the guests, hold them accountable for what they said. If they wanted to say something about their opponent, well, then prove it. Have something behind it other than just your personal opinion. And if it's only opinion, that should be made clear. That's all it is. So I sent out to the various cable networks, news networks, suggesting a program with a much tougher format, tougher interviews, and that, in fact, I even suggested a name for the program, that it be called the Spin-Free Zone. I never received an acknowledgement from anybody that they had received the email, and I didn't really expect to hear anything. But within a couple of weeks after I sent the email, lo and behold, on the O'Reilly Factor on Fox News, suddenly became known as the No-Spin Zone. Now, I have no way to prove that that was as a result of my suggestion or my email. Maybe it was just coincidence. But at any rate, whether it was accidental or intentional, the idea, the concept that I had suggested ended up becoming a reality, at least in the case of the O'Reilly Show. So what can you do about the spin and the lies? The spin, I guess, is an acceptable thing. But the lies, how do you get a host of one of these programs, one of these interview shows, to get tough? I don't have an answer for that. I did what I did as far as the emails go, but I have no direct control over the various TV shows. I suppose emailing is one method, and if enough people express their concern about the way the shows are handled, perhaps there will be some changes. But the other thing, of course, is the remote control and switch channels. But I have certain stations now, certain programs that I refuse to watch, and because they are so ridiculously softball or and so biased in many cases to a particular party or candidate that it's almost nauseating for me. So I won't even turn those stations on anymore. I just go elsewhere and let it go with that. And I think from conversations I have in various locations, in person or chat rooms and so forth on the internet, that a lot of people are frustrated. And I think this also helps to lower people's opinions of politicians and politics, which is a shame. I mean, that really should be, these should be people you could look up to and admire. And in many, many cases, as the ratings show for both President Bush, for the approval ratings for Congress are lower than his. I mean, it's and not to belittle used car salesmen, and I used to sell cars at one point, but I've heard it said that politicians are considered a rung or two below the stereotypical used car salesman. So there are a number of reasons, I think, why politics needs to be cleaned up. But before I go any further in that, I want to switch to something that's related, I think, that just happened over the last few days, has come to a head, and that's the John Edwards situation. The National Enquirer, a magazine or publication that doesn't have the best of reputations, considered a supermarket tabloid and so on and so forth, and that it gets worse opinions by some people. But they broke a story alleging that John Edwards had been having or had an affair with a former campaign worker, who a lady by the name of Riel or Riley. I understand it's spelled Riel, but pronounced Riley Hunter. And she actually was doing some film work for him, for making commercials or documentaries about him and so forth. And that he had an affair with her. And in fact, when the story broke last fall, the Enquirer said that she was pregnant and that John Edwards was in fact the father of the child she was carrying. Well, Edwards denied the allegations, you know, tabloid trash, basically. It was so ridiculous that it didn't deserve a response from him. Then, on July 21st of this year, the Enquirer, the National Enquirer people, received a tip that Mr. Edwards, former Senator Edwards, was going to meet Ms. Hunter at a hotel in Beverly Hills. They staked the place out, saw her arrive in the afternoon. He arrived at about 9:45 p.m., went through apparently the parking garage and avoided the populated areas of the hotel where he might be seen or recognized, got up to her room, and didn't leave that room until approximately 2:45 a.m. So he was up there about 5 hours, in what a lot of people would consider the dead of night. The Inquirer printed the allegations, printed the story, and stated how when Edwards left the room, the reporters tried to question him, and he secreted himself in entered a men's room and then held the door shut, wouldn't let them in. And finally, hotel security was summoned, and they escorted Mr. Edwards out. Now it's just developed that Edwards has admitted to actually having the affair. And in spite of his previous denials, his wife, who was battling cancer, has also issued statements that she was aware that he confessed to her in 2006 that he was had made a mistake, I believe is how they put it, and that she forgave him and admired him for his courage and coming, you know, and admitting that he had done something wrong. So now we get to the real, what I consider the bad part. And I've heard back since the days of Richard Nixon and Watergate the statement that the cover-up is generally worse than the crime when it comes to political events and scandal. And my suspicion is that's where we're heading with the Edwards situation. And here's what's happened since Edwards made his statement of admission. The National Enquirer is continuing, of course, their investigation. They said they have a lot more information that's going to be coming out. And the national media have picked up on this. So we have a lot of people looking into Mr. Edwards and his situation, his affair with Miss Hunter. And what's happened over the last 48 hours or so is when Edwards said that the affair with Hunter was brief, started and ended in 2006. The question is being raised, and most of your media people are expressing disbelief in this. If that is true, if the affair was brief and ended in 2006, why was he in this woman's hotel room with the now born baby, was born in February, and being referred to as his love child, his Edwards' love child? Why was he there with the two of them in the dead of night? What reason would he have, if the relationship was over with, to be meeting with her at that particular time and location? So that's an interesting question. And the admission to his wife supposedly was made in 2006 also, and that was that he had done something wrong, the affair was over with. I might be just inquisitive by nature or skeptical, but I have a hard time figuring a legitimate reason for him to have been there in that hotel at that time. One story that's now being floated as an explanation is that the National Enquirer article and possibly upcoming articles were a concern for Mr. Edwards, who by some accounts was being considered for vice president nominee for Senator Obama, or possibly of an important position such as attorney general in an Obama administration, and that a lid needed to be kept on the story so it wouldn't end any chances Edwards had of being picked for some important position or office. Well, I can understand. I mean, I don't condone it, but I understand that now he's in a pickle, and if his future's on the line, I can understand wanting to keep a lid on things. I can understand his desire to do that. But if you know that the National Enquirer reporters and maybe a few of the so-called mainstream media people are pursuing this story, they are contacting many of your friends, associates, campaign workers, trying to get interviewers and interviewing some, they obviously had some inside sources because they had the information to that he was going to be at the hotel meeting Miss Hunter on July 21st. So why would you risk meeting this woman in person? If it's a plan or a strategy type thing, why not work through a surrogate? Why not work through a lawyer where the communication is privileged and have your lawyer contact Miss Hunter, whoever needed to be contacted, and make arrangements on how you're going to respond to the investigations. That seems to me, for an intelligent man, Edwards was a highly successful trial lawyer, and I really have trouble accepting the idea that this was some kind of a business meeting at that time of night in that location, and that he would take that kind of a risk to be seen with her or where she was staying. It just doesn't add up to me. So I tend not to believe that particular story. Another thing Edward said was that when asked by an interviewer of rumors that Miss Hunter was being given substantial amounts of money to cover her lodging, care, and so forth for her and her child. Well, Edward said he knew nothing about that. If he couldn't say for certain that maybe some avid supporter of his wasn't doing it, but if so, it was without his knowledge or approval. Now word comes out that, in fact, Edward's former finance manager is providing money to Miss Hunter. And that's certainly annoying as far as believing his explanation of what happened and his denials that he knew anything about this. It's hard for me to believe that this individual, although I guess he's a wealthy man, would be taking money out of his own pocket to try to keep a lid on something affecting his candidate or his friend, and never discuss that with Mr. Edwards himself. Never run the idea by him, say, hey, I think this would be a good idea. Do you mind if I do it? To at least let him know what he intended to do. Even if Edwards wasn't paying the money, even if the money wasn't coming out of Edwards' campaign or one of the organizations, the not-for-profit organizations he created during his various runs for office. Even if that was the case, it's just hard for me to believe this guy would do this totally on his own. Because it would be obvious, I think, that if word got out that this money was being paid, people would paint Edwards in even more of a bad light. So I got to believe that that this fella checked with Edwards at a minimum, checked with him and got his at least tacit approval to go ahead and start making payments. And now Edwards, although he admitted the affair, even though he says what I'm dubious about it ending in 2006, one of his other campaign workers and supporters has come forward and said that he is the father of this child. It's not John Edwards' baby. Well, that's also a situation that I'm a little skeptical about, because the same gentleman who is paying Miss Hunter this money, reportedly $15,000 a month, is paying the guy who is admitted a married man with kids of his own, who is claiming to be the father of Miss Hunter's child. They're paying him about $24,000 a month. So you got to wonder. it's certainly a cause for concern, in my opinion, and reason to question the veracity of all these people. And I don't know where this will end. We'll just have to wait till the dust clears. But I was listening to a Geraldo Rivera last night, and he did a segment on the Edwards situation. And his brother, Craig, was out in Beverly Hills on assignment at the hotel where this rendezvous between Edwards and Hunter went down. And Mr. Rivera said that his sources, which are independent of the National Enquirer's sources, said that Edwards, over the past year, has met Miss Hunter at that same hotel 4 or 5 times. Now, if that's true, and, you know, again, that this is what the statement was made on the program, I don't have any personal knowledge, or I don't know his sources or how reliable they are. But if this is true, then the affair may have ended in 2006, and maybe at the time Edwards thought it was over, but it certainly could be argued that this information indicates that it restarted at some point. Because it would be hard to imagine, if there was nothing going on between the two of them, why he would be meeting her at this hotel when he was caught by the National Enquirer, or these other times now that Rivera alleged the rendezvous took place. So I have a real problem with accepting that. So now you got, had he come completely clean, Edwards, in his statement, and given a legitimate reason, if there was any, for meeting this woman after the affair was supposedly over, he may have gotten it behind him. I'm not saying he hasn't already been probably fatally wounded as far as his political career, but maybe the media would have backed off somewhat if he just came out and came clean with the whole thing. It appears that he maybe is being less than honest, less than candid, and if so, this is probably just the tip of the iceberg as far as ongoing reports and ongoing stories and allegations. So I think we've just seen the start of this thing with Edwards. I don't think we've seen the end of it. And then this also raises the question that I've heard already by some Edwards supporters going back to the Bill Clinton era and the impeachment. Is Edwards' private life, or not just Edwards, but a public figure, the private life of a public figure, should that be out of bounds for the media? If it doesn't have a direct impact on his or her ability to occupy the office they're running for or that they are already in, is it anybody's business? And I didn't agree with that position during Clinton. I don't agree with it now. Edwards was a possible VP choice, and he could actually have been the nominee or the presumptive nominee. He was in the race during the primary. And he also, again, has been rumored to be in contention for a high-level position should Obama become president. I clearly think that the public should be entitled to know whether they're voting for a liar or whether they want a person that has trouble with the truth to be in a position, a high-level position within their government. Now, if you don't care about it, if it doesn't matter to you, if you want to say, well, it's his private business, it's his whatever, sex life is between him and his family, certainly you're entitled to that position. But if it does matter to you, then it should be out there. You know, put it out there, let the voters, let the public decide if it means anything to them, or if it's simply private business that nobody has any need to know. My position is, get it out there, let the public, let the voters decide how relevant it is. And, you know, when these people run for public office, they got to be prepared. If they got some skeletons in the closet, they're probably going to come out. Okay, we're out of time for today. I'm going to be back on next week, and we're going to get into more current events and more political discussions. And Got a bunch of topics I'm going to go over. And have a great week, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.